The Startup to Scale Up Game Plan is brought to you by Alpina Search, Europe's premier talent search firm, dedicated to helping technology startups and scale-ups recruit high-impact executives. Now over to your host, Gary Riemann.
Welcome to another episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan. Joining us today is Kashish Gupta, the brilliant leader behind HiTouch. HiTouch is a SaaS scale-up that helps companies sync customer data across different back-end databases and systems. And in this episode, we'll have a deep dive into HiTouch's journey, into Kashish's journey. We'll discuss the recent investment from Databricks and HiTouch's unique approach to data management, and also the company's commitment to fostering a diverse and inclusive team culture. So Kashish, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Super excited to be here.
Exactly. Let's start with the big news. Databricks recently invested in HiTouch alongside Bain and Iconic and Amplify in a $38 million funding round, valued the company at over $600 million. Can you share the story behind this investment round and also your strategic partnership with Databricks? And I noticed now you also have a strategic partnership with Snowflake as well.
That's right, Gary. We are super lucky to be in a position where even in this market, we were able to raise money. And the way we thought about it was we wanted to have enough in our bank to be able to execute for at least a few years and prove out the revenue story and the customer traction before we went out to market for the next round. And so the way we think about fundraising is valuation multiples will come down. They're not going to be the same 100, 300x as they were in 2021. And with that sobering up, we want to be prepared for any sort of financial market. And on the revenue side, we've been pretty lucky to continue to see revenue growth throughout last year and this year. And that's kind of why we decided to raise that round, just to make sure we had at least 3 years of runway. And the story on the Databricks and Snowflake side is that we've actually worked with both of them for quite a long time, ever since the impetus of startup of HiTouch. And it was only a natural progression for them to ask if they could invest. We took money from Databricks and we're very happy to be working with their team. We also took money from other strategics like HubSpot. And the nature of the relationship hasn't really changed at all. They've been a good partner to us before and after as well. And they don't have any sort of like information rights that would hurt our partnership with other warehouse companies. So the way we've kind of done this is more of like a public signal that the relationship exists than anything else. But the go-to-market relationship and product relationship is still the exact same.
You mentioned that these strategic relationships have been around pretty much since the inception of the business. I'm really curious. I'd like to dig behind that. So when you were a tiny little company with no revenue or, you know, minimal revenues, how did you get such huge organizations like Databricks and Snowflake to partner with you at that very, very early stage?
Well, I think we were equally surprised about the interest, but it's because of the physics of the relationship. So we truly help Snowflake sell to marketers or Databricks sell to marketers. Traditionally, they sell to the data org or IT org within a company. And especially in this market scenario, the IT orgs are right now compressed and their budgets are compressed. So Snowflake sellers are very hungry to get line of business budget. And that is exactly what HiTouch does. All of our infrastructure is built on the data warehouse, which means that all of the compute and storage all is living within the data warehouse. And that seller is increasing their consumption. So they oftentimes come to us and they say, hey, I have this incredible customer. Say it's someone like PetSmart. They'll say, hey, we have a great customer like PetSmart and we would love to grow within their marketing organization. And so we'll help them grow. And because of the kind of like mutually beneficial relationships since day one, we've been pretty lucky to be able to work with their sales team. And it used to be a pretty ground up, bottoms up motion where we would just meet different sellers and collaborate with them. And over time, we got better alignment with the executives and the leaders in the company.
Cool. I want to talk about reverse ETL. It's mentioned in your blog. What exactly is reverse ETL in layman's terms? And why is this so important in the world of data management?
Reverse ETL is the concept of getting data from data warehouses into SaaS tools. So it's really the opposite of what we traditionally consider ETL. ETL has traditionally been to get data into our data warehouses and in order to aggregate it all into one place. our aim is to now proliferate that data back into the SaaS tools of record, like Salesforce, HubSpot, the email tools, the ad tools like Facebook and Google. Those are all our destinations. And the whole idea is that if marketers had data in those tools, they would be able to personalize marketing better. So we want marketers to have data at their fingertips. And the best way to do that is actually not through BI, it's by getting that data back into those SaaS tools. Just to give you like a little bit of a primer about what Hightouch does, we really invented reverse ETL. It's something that folks would build in-house through different Python scripts and Airflow jobs. And we made it easy to build reverse ETL in your company. You just give us a SQL query and we pipe that SQL query into your SaaS tool, whether it's a Facebook ad, Snapchat ad, TikTok ad, could be Salesforce Marketing Cloud or Iterable or Braze. It doesn't really matter what SaaS tool you have. We support over 200 of them. And we make it dead simple to get that data back into those SaaS tools. And as we've grown our business, the reason you kind of hear about this really fast growth rate is because of two things. One, every business in the world that uses data needs reverse ETL. And it's kind of a matter of time until they start adopting it or whether they build it in-house. So we had a large inflow of customers finding us to go adopt this thing called reverse ETL. And then in addition to that, we've also built verticalized tools for marketers, places where they can log in into our app and point and click, choose their customers that they want to market, and other point and click interfaces for marketers to be able to do higher level tasks, like run their ad campaigns. And because of that, we've also grown the amount of value that we provide our customers.
The vast majority of your leads are inbound. That's driven by a really impactful approach to marketing and demand gen. So I'd love to learn more about this. Did you prioritize marketing from day one?
So we really did. To be honest, it was a controversial decision because marketing is an expensive thing to prioritize. But what we said is two things. One is that we said, we're going to spend money on marketing by hiring great people. And we're going to do so as early as possible in our business. Because our business is the kind of business that has the potential to have hundreds or thousands of companies coming in that. And it's purely an education game. So in 2021, it was not always so easy to close a customer, but it was very easy to get a customer excited about reverse ETL. And they would tell us, wow, this is so exciting. We're going to come back in 6 months once our data warehouse is better, and we're going to buy reverse ETL to activate our data. And almost like clockwork, they would come back in 6 months post-education, and they would buy reverse ETL. And it was not a tough sale that year because it was teach them something awesome. They get excited. They go do all the preparation work and alignment internally, and they come back to us to buy the product. So that was really exciting. And because we had seen that motion start working with a few enterprise customers, we had felt that this is really the right way to grow the business. And so I think right now our marketing team is about 10 people. It grew to a pretty reasonable size even in 2021. And we really did things like hiring for partnerships, hiring for community, hiring for content early on.
Now, I'm sure it's not all been smooth sailing. So what mistakes have you made during your entrepreneurial journey so far? And what are some of the key lessons that you've learned?
There's always so much to improve on. I think there's really good examples. Like the number one principle we follow is we listen to our customer. And customers will oftentimes ask for different features or different things that they want. We resisted building these for some time. We have a reputation in market to be known for really shipping fast. And the truth is that like we actually have quite a bit of discipline for things that we say no to. And just this year, we said, hey, look, our customers are asking for all these things. Let's really staff up the engineering team, use some of that funding that we raised earlier this year, and grow the product offering to be able to serve all these different marketing use cases, whether it's things like identity resolution, the LiveRamp use case I described, and so on. And so one lesson, I guess, is especially investors will tell you that you should not build more than one core product early on in your company's lifecycle, because it's too difficult to support and go to market with multiple products. Well, we did exactly that. We have almost like, if you think about it, 6 products today. And I think it was a very good decision. It shows how we can have really good NRR and expansion ability for our customer base. And then I would say the other is like really probably, we ran the business ourselves without hiring leadership for some time. And if anything, we would have hired the leadership sooner and ramped them up faster. So once you kind of like learn to delegate and you see what delegation feels like, you experience the ability to scale yourself. And every single founder probably feels that they should have scaled themselves sooner. Our timing was appropriate, but having the leader in place to build the team and work in parallel while you're able to do things like work on positioning or like sales enablement, it really makes a difference because you kind of have two heads thinking about the same problem and working on it together.
What's been the most challenging part of handing over to the senior leadership team that you've hired?
No matter who you bring in, they always have different priorities or different things that they believe will work or not work. I think the tough part is deciding where to trust them and where to trust yourself, especially when they have more experience than you in that field. So for example, most of our leaders, probably every single one of them actually, is far more qualified to be doing their function than we are. And so they have the qualifications to know in and out what that function should be doing. For example, our VP of marketing has been a marketing leader for over 10 years. He understands marketing in and out, and he has really a more demand gen background and has done product marketing in the past. Our intuition as founders will always be really spot on for what the customer is thinking, what the customer wants, what product we can build. And so it's our job to have a really strong opinion on positioning and voice of customer. It's his job to have a very strong position on tactics and what we execute on and where we spend money. And so it's extremely important for us to trust him on those things rather than have extremely like hard-headed opinions. And it's his job to work with us on the positioning and figure out what we should be saying to the market together. If you don't kind of like talk about that openly, where is the trust in both directions? Then I think people find themselves stepping on each other's toes. But in this case, we have a great relationship and we're able to really function. Same thing kind of applies for all the different business functions where you figure out where can that person really execute and where can you execute? And then you work together on those things.
And when it comes to your global growth strategy, what are some of the challenges and opportunities you've encountered in international markets?
Since very early days, have had a large base of customers in Europe. Even today, we have about 150 customers paying in Europe. It's about 20% of our customer base. That's not normal, I think, for a company like us. I think it's purely a result of product market fit with GDPR compliant customers. So the more GDPR compliant you are, the more you want to build your marketing stack on top of your data warehouse. You want full control of who your marketers are reaching. And if you want that marketer to not reach that person because they've opted out, you want to be able to delete that person from the database and simultaneously delete them from all the marketing tools. So that is exactly what we provide, which is why Europe actually had a large reason to use Hightouch, even potentially a better product market fit in some ways than the US. And so we have now 3 salespeople there, and we're growing that team to 4 salespeople, 2 solutions engineers, a support staff, and we have a few engineers there as well. So I think we're going to be hitting 10 staff within Europe itself very, very soon, which was a decision that we could have never foreseen, but one where we again truly follow the customer. And so the opportunity has been really good. And I think we're going to scale that team even more quickly than we already have. The opportunities are just surfacing where the largest enterprises in Europe really are reaching out to us and asking to try the product. The challenge, on the other hand, is that very candidly, those folks are not getting the same level of community as the folks here in the US. They're dispersed across Amsterdam, Paris, London, and a couple other cities, which means that not only are they in Europe and in a different time zone, they're also dispersed within Europe in their specific geographies. And so my goal is, and I don't yet know exactly what I'm going to do, but my goal is to figure out a way for them to develop that sense of community and have that kind of like that like group to talk to and like have a social experience at work a little bit.
Yeah, and I know community is a big theme with you, both with your customers, your partners, and also with your employees. So this concept of building communities, is that something that's developed since you've been running Hightouch, or is that something that you had in your mind or in your experience before you set up the business?
I would not say it's something formal that I've worked on before, but what I've always held a perspective on is that the human connection is most important before everything else. Whether it's the human connection between your peers within the company, with your customers, or with your partners. And the reason for that is because in the end of the day, we're just selling SaaS. The process of buying SaaS usually is pretty irritating. The process of building SaaS together is usually actually quite fun. But in the end of the day, the motivation is not something like solving cancer, right? So we have to be pretty realistic with ourselves. Why do we get up every day? And a big part of why people get up every day is because they learn from their coworkers and they feel inspired by their coworkers. They feel inspired by being on a mission together where they can make impact together. And so that togetherness does actually make a really big difference, both to me, my co-founders, and our employees. And I've just seen that over the years. Like, one thing I've always felt that my people that I really respect have taught me is that the way you make someone feel is much more important than what you do or what you say. I think that especially applies to customers. How you make them feel during their process while they're talking to you and potentially buying from you is never really forgotten. And it earns a lot of goodwill for the future. And the same goes for like employees working with each other or founders working with their employees. And so that's kind of irreplaceable. Like folks will ask us too, like, what happens when our competitors copy our features, which they certainly will. Well, the culture that we've built and the quality of team that we've built cannot be copied. And ask any of our customers that have talked to our competitors, they will continuously say that HighTech is the team to work with. And it's, you know it when you have it, and you also definitely know it when you don't.
How have you been encouraging D&I across the organization, and what are some of the benefits you've seen as a result of that?
Yeah, so I guess primer is that we can always do better. It's something that we're continuously looking to improve on. And I honestly think that if you were to ask me, then I would 90% talk about what we could do better rather than what we've already done. And then on the side of what we've already done, I guess the important piece is that diversity comes in all different shapes and forms. It's just extremely important to recognize that people come from different walks of life and they might have a perspective on things that you may not even realize they have perspective on. And so since the very early days, we've been pretty clear that politics don't have a place within HighTech and that we're really here to work on this product together, to sell it together, to market it together. And that's what we'll be talking about within work. We're not going to be talking about the social issues, no matter how important they are to us. I have my own very, very strong opinions, and I would absolutely love to share them, but I won't in a work context. And so that's why we've been very clear on that, because we know that we always have people on both sides of every coin. And we kind of hired everyone in the middle of COVID. So since the beginning, we've always had folks that were on both sides of the political spectrum, and we've respected both of those opinions because people are entitled to those opinions. It's not up to us to determine what opinions they should have outside of work. And so during COVID, people, there was different people that thought differently about the vaccine. There's different people that thought differently about the presidential candidates and so on, right? So that's really like something that we don't have an opinion on whatsoever. Even by not having an opinion on that, in my opinion, I think we really do encourage diversity. Additionally, I think we try to give each group a little bit of a forum to talk within themselves and share kind of how they're feeling about different topics. And our head of people, Amina, does a brilliant job of surfacing up different things that we can do better and different opinions that are within the groups. So I think like one thing that we've learned is people need an outlet for whatever they're feeling. That outlet does not always need to be a public Slack channel, but they should have that outlet. And it is important for them to have that outlet. Otherwise, different types of resentment can foster over time. And so our head of people does a very good job of really giving people that outlet with each other or with herself. And that kind of like lets us move on as things happen in the world. And things will always happen in the world, and we will never be perfect. So it's very important to really just give people that forum.
And one of the themes that I've kind of picked up during this conversation is how important it is for your customers to be delighted with your product, with your solution. So what are some of the strategies, some of the best practices you've implemented to ensure that you've got really strong levels of customer success and satisfaction?
Yes, I'll give you the early days one, and I'll give you like what it looks like at scale. In the early days, folks would tell us, hey, what if I just build this in-house? I don't know if I want to buy a SaaS product. I'll just build it. And so we would ask them, what if you had a team of 10 in 2 years of time, would you build in-house? And how would it look like? And what were all the features that you would build? And they would tell us they would have two-way version control with Git. They would have a place to log all their different errors. They would have observability so they can get alerts when the errors fire within their syncs. They would tell us that they would want certain destinations to function this way or a different way. And they gave us their like laundry list of developer features. We built every single one of those features over the course of 6 months. And it's not that it took like 6 weeks. They were actually very complex and they did take a lot of time. But we integrated with dbt. We allowed HighTech to be configurable via code. We have two-way Git sync so that you can version control within Git and roll back within Git. We have a debugger log that's not just logs, but it's a whole UI. Lets you see for every single row what the API request was to the destination as well as the response. So we built every single one of these features in 6 months. And then we came back to those customers. We didn't try to convince them that we were the best products out there and they should buy us anyways. we just were humble. We built off every single one of those features in 6 months, came back to the customers and we said, hey, look, here's what it looks like. It has every single feature you may ever want in-house. What do you think about using our tool? And they said, you know what? Yeah, I haven't had time to build this in the last 6 months. You know what? I think I'll use your tool. And we repeatedly found that until by the end of 2021, every single person was saying, you know what? This is a buy. This is not a build. Because you've thought exactly about what I as a developer would want. And we really were first to market to have those kinds of features. We would tell stories which were completely true. Things like, as a SaaS buyer, it really bothers me when SaaS tools are black boxes. I hate reaching out to support teams when something errors out. I want to be able to see within the UI what's wrong and fix it myself. So that's exactly what we build for our customers. In the UI, 99% of the time, they can see exactly what's going wrong. They can fix their data and they can rerun the sync and it'll work. And so our rigor was really along the lines of what do our customers want with unlimited resources and what would we want if we were buying this tool? And we built exactly that. And we didn't really sell it in advance of having those things. Listening to the customer, staying humble, and prioritizing developers is what generated that excellent customer experience. And no one else in the market had that. So we were for months and months, maybe years actually, supporting developers much better than our competitors. So it was a no-brainer. We would tell folks, I don't want to tell you why to use me versus my competitor. Try both. Here's what you should try and what it will look like. And come back to me in a week and let me know which one you like better. Our customers would always try both. They would always choose high touch. And it was like a 95% conversion rate. And it was because we weren't trying to force them. It's because we really let the product speak for itself. Most of 2021 looked like that. Many parts of 2022 look like that. Now we have a support team of about 4 people and a customer success team of about 5 people. And we're super lucky to have really the best support and customer success staff in the world. They're all technical. We don't have any CSMs that are not technical or support staff that are not technical. And they can answer pretty much any question for the customer. They don't have to go ask someone else for feedback before they give that answer. And so we've really engineered as little telephone within our customer experience as possible. So your salesperson should be able to ask most questions, or your solution engineer, or your technical architect, which is what we call our customer support, customer success folks. But no one should really have to ask someone else before they get the answer. And of course, as the business grows, that changes. If you're trying one of our newer products, you may have to ask a PM. But 90% of the time, the same person you ask the first question to should be able to answer that first question. And in 2021, when we were building this culture, we really told our sales folks, we said, hey, look, doesn't matter what your background is, you're going to learn this product in and out. And the reason you're going to do it is because I want you to be able to answer every question your customer has without having to go get feedback from someone else. And they asked us, wait, but we've never really learned a technical product before. And I said, well, the reason we hired you is because you're great at learning and I trust you to figure this out and I will help you get there. And so for a lot of our sales folks, HighTouch was the first job where like they were really trusted to learn the same level of technical detail as an engineer or a PM within the team.
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun building out this business that you're so passionate about. But at the same time, I guess you've got a lot of stress on your shoulders. You got to keep your investors happy, et cetera. What do you do to stay sane? What do you do in your downtime to relax and switch off? Do you switch off?
I'm trying to get better at it. I don't think I'm too good at that today. One thing I've been getting into in the last 4 months or so is really sports. I've always gone to the gym. It's not the same. Playing squash, playing volleyball, playing tennis. With sports like these, you really cannot focus on anything else other than beating your opponent. And the brilliant thing is that there's no stakes. So say you lose, you don't feel bad at all. The whole point was that you were competitive for those 2 or 3 hours. You forgot about everything else in the world and you were focused on something that was not work. And that has been a really good release for me because I've always been competitive. But when you're competing for a reason, such as to close that next customer or for revenue, it's a very different mentality than when you're competing just for the sake of competing in a video game, a sport, something like that. And so I think like being able to channel your competitiveness in a sport just makes a huge difference and lets me tune out of the world for a little bit. So I've been enjoying that, but that's a more recent one. And honestly, the other advice like I have for folks is, and this is something I have not internalized, I've not mastered this whatsoever, is that folks have to keep an emotional state independent of the success of their business. 99% of founders will define their happiness or their emotional state by how well their business is doing that day. And their business will be doing something terrible will happen one day and something amazing will happen the next day. And that'll directly correlate to their emotional state going up and down. I think it's very important to, rather than reacting to the day-to-day, have your mental and emotional state controlled by really like the long-term potential and the general trend. Or if possible, for some people, something completely outside of work, whether it's your family life, your friends, something else. I think that's really the most healthy version of this, which I've certainly not mastered. And then the medium healthy version of this is just to be thinking about the long-term potential and where you think the business is trending rather than the day-to-day problems. But really to keep sanity, I think that's the only way. And that really helps de-stress because you might have that employee that just missed their number. Well, we're talking to them about how we can hit next quarter's number and do really well over the year. The same thing goes for yourself. You may have missed an initiative that you had wanted to do in Q3, but you still have the longer term potential of the business that you're working towards.
And let's talk about that long-term potential and your long-term vision. Let's think forward to November 2028. What's your vision for High Touch 5 years from now?
5 years away is a very long time. There's a couple of things that are very clear to us. First and foremost is that we are the best suited to help marketers use their data better, whether it's from a usability and access perspective, a precision and personalization perspective. We are the best team in the market to help marketers do that. And so our goal is to help every marketer better utilize their data for their marketing and give them that access directly rather than having to go through other people like engineers or data folks. So it's really to give that marketer the power they deserve and the control they deserve over their marketing campaigns and over their data. And we want to make that as easy as possible for them. So I think we will see companies like Adobe and LiveRamp more and more. And our products and suites will look more like those over time, where they're serving marketers directly and able to really help those marketing teams operate and execute their campaigns. So the vision is really to build the next generation of those marketing platforms. And the second piece that we can be sure about is that it's not just marketing. We have tons of use cases outside of marketing, like sales and finance and support. And so it's to continue serving that data user best. There's tons of marketing tools in the world. The only one that data teams love is High Touch. And so when you go to that CMO and you work with them to solve a marketing initiative, they have five or six different folks speaking in their ear and saying, work with me. But the data folks only have one, and that's High Touch. And so we really want to continue to evangelize that data person and make their life as good as possible in supporting that marketing team. So it's to build a very great developer experience and product for data people that will evangelize them to then eventually help marketers solve their personalization and data problems.
Well, that's a superb vision. I'd like to wish you, Kashish, and your whole team huge success over the next 3, 4, 5 years and beyond. And thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan.
Thanks, Gary. Had a good time.
This episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan was brought to you by Alpina Search. Head over to www.alpinasearch.com for advice on scaling your technology startup and recruiting high-impact senior talent.